from strategic partners to strategic competitors, U.S. and China relationships have entered a long winter. As both economies are deeply intertwined, how can companies navigate their businesses in such a rapidly changing environment? Jim McGregor, a veteran China watcher, is in Hong Kong to share his insights. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to Hong Kong. You recently spent 2 weeks in Washington, D.C. Can you give us the latest on-the-ground sentiment of U.S. toward China?
Wow. Yeah. Washington right now is as dark as I've ever seen it in regard to opinions on China. It's almost like there's no China has no friends outside the Chinese embassy these days. In Democrats, Republicans, I mean, there's one bipartisan issue in Washington today, and that's that China's a bad guy. It really has gotten very, 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 very severe.
Actually, when the U.S.-China relationship started, U.S. and China both have common enemy. So your enemy's enemy is your friend, and that is the Soviet Union. So right now, we are in two different camps. One is led by the Western world, for example, the United States, and the other one is by China, emerging superpower. So do you see this conflict? It's ultimately about the clash of two differing systems. And what is the end goal of the United States? As Steve Bannon even suggested a regime change in China, what bothers the U.S. the most? Is it the Chinese Communist Party the problem, or the one party rule is the problem?
Oh, my. There's a lot to unpack there. Look, what's happened now is, one thing is, we in the West have always, we kind of looked down on the Chinese system and said they're going to have to become more like us because you can't become prosperous unless you have democracy and open information. But China's kind of turned that on its head, even though we've got to admit China has changed a lot, but they're not getting as much like us as we hoped they would. Now, the way things work now, actually, the Chinese system has some advantages because right now, business used to be the ballast between the countries because we had different. China needed capital, it needed know-how, it had a market. We got low-end and cheap manufacturing for cheap products in the West, and it was kind of a bit of a balance. Now that China's gotten powerful and moved up the ladder, we are both competing for all the key technologies of the future. So business is actually a conflict now. It's not the things that hold things together. So it's the interface of the Chinese system against the Western system that has to be adjusted and figured out. Meanwhile, we've got ideological strongman leaders in both capitals, and that has really exacerbated things. The good news is that this has to be worked out, because if the U.S. and China don't get along and figure out a way to work with each other, it's going to really be problematic for the global political and economic system and could lead to real problems. So they both have a lot of reason to work it out. And remember, Americans and Chinese get along very well as individuals. Our kids go to school together. They get married. Businesses work very well together when they can do business, and it's not in the middle of a bunch of government messing around. So I'm hopeful we can work this out, but we are in the Deng Xiaoping era is over. You know, where we go forward is going to be different.
And you have lived in China since 1990. How has the Chinese society evolved given the recent U.S.-China tension? How are Americans living in China perceived by the Chinese? Could you share your personal experience?
As I said, Chinese and Americans get along very well. I get along with Chinese people very well, and I don't really feel tension today. You got to remember, where China's going with top-down Leninism and this very tight system and having to study the leader's thought and all of that, that's not where China was headed, and that's not where the Chinese people were headed, but that's where the party is taking them today. So I see a real maodun, a real contradiction between most people, the way they think and the lives they lead, and also where the government and party is going in controlling them. However, there is a pride that we are now getting powerful. We are now somebody in the world, and we help that out every day by having democracy being a mess in America, a mess in Europe. We got Brexit, we got Trump. We're spending our time on cable TV yelling at each other. China's on the move. It's got 5, 10, 20-year plans. And so there's a lot of pride in that, too. But the propaganda, and the propaganda is very strong, that all of these problems in trade and in business and politics today between the U.S. and China are caused by America, because we want to keep China poor, we want to keep it down. That, because China controls the media, that's a very strong message, and it does resonate. No one's taking any responsibility for the way things have turned out, and that's scary.
But in the United States, American sentiment toward Chinese have changed a little bit. You know, the U.S. government has said that all Chinese students are subject to be spies. You know, when China opened up its door in 1978, they sent young students to study in the United States, and many of them come back to China with their open mind and liberal ideas, and which is beneficial to both China's economic reform and also beneficial to the United States, because a lot of Chinese people have stayed and they work in the Silicon Valley. Given the recent negative sentiment of Americans toward Chinese living in America or Chinese Americans, how do you see this will play out?
It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. It's part of Trump's whole anti-immigration rhetoric and very racist, really, attitudes. He's actually made it okay to be racist in China, in America, and that's really, really sad. Look, the Chinese, if we create an atmosphere where we push these very, very capable and earnest Chinese people who want to be Americans, live in America, if we create an atmosphere to push them out, then we're done. Because immigration is America's great strength. You know, of course there's been hacking, of course there's been theft. Okay, well then we need to have strong security systems to guard against that. You don't go against the whole race. And the background to this is, you know, Chinese are the only ethnic group that has been barred from the U.S. It was more than 60 years. We had the Chinese Exclusion Act, where Chinese could not immigrate to the U.S. So there is a very dark and terrible history behind this. And you got to remember when China was developing its early technology, when it developed the atom bomb, it developed the hydrogen bomb, it developed the ESA's red satellite. Who were the scientists that really put that together? They were ethnic Chinese scientists who were pushed out of America during the Cold War by McCarthyism. Do we want to do that again? I mean, this is asinine.
Yes, I agree. The recent trade dispute is a means to force China to scale back its ambitious industrial policy, for example, the Made in China 2025 strategy, and level the playing field for American businesses operating in China. However, there is also an unintended consequence that it gives China a good reason to be less dependent on the West and more self-reliant on technology, and the government has since accelerated the process. But the Chinese system is rather closed. There is no free flow of information. Is China capable to become a world leader in innovation and technology in such a closed system?
Yes. China's actually quite capable of doing that, because you've got to remember, very, very capable and smart and hardworking Chinese people. Tens of thousands of them have gone to Carnegie Mellon, MIT, Cal Polytech, and universities all over the world. They work for Google, Microsoft, HP, IBM, Toshiba, Panasonic, Siemens, you name it. These people are very capable of building a tech sector. We should get over our arrogance that China can't innovate. And we're pushing them into this. You know, by taking these extreme measures, you know, especially with the entity list and trying to cut off Huawei from being able to do business with anything connected to America and our components, we are pushing China into a corner. I mean, Xi Jinping went to Jiangshan a few weeks ago, where that Long March started, and he said, okay, 15 years. We will have a Long March in 15 years, and we will surpass the United States. So China's looking at this as, okay, if you're going to be that way, it's going to hurt us for a while, but we're going to emerge from this. And so You know, with Trump, we may win the battle and lose the war. I hate to call it a war, but that, you know, we may lose the long-term advantages or long-term cooperation.
And we're almost 1 year into the trade war. Many people have come to realize that there isn't just about a trade war, but a tech economic war. As you mentioned previously, that there is a paradigm shift in U.S.-China relations. There's a lot of talk about decoupling, but you have also mentioned previously that you can't decouple unless you are a couple. Nonetheless, after decades of constructive engagement with China, it is becoming more evident that the U.S. is starting to scale back its relationship with China. Imposing tariffs on Chinese products, for example, has pushed firms to accelerate supply chain shift away from China and to other ASEAN and emerging markets. As U.S.-China relations enter a long winter with no endgame in sight in the short term, how can businesses navigate their business strategies, and are there any potential opportunities at all?
Absolutely, opportunities, because there are the supply chain shifting is happening in a couple ways. Companies that source components or pieces or some products from China are moving those supply chains out. And I think a lot of companies came to the realization they had too many eggs in the China basket. They needed to diversify. However, many companies and a lot of Fortune 1000 companies are doubling down and embedding themselves deeper in China. They're buying technology, they're buying companies, they're partnering. Because if you're doing electric vehicles, self-driving vehicles, Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, they look at China as the place of the future, so you better be involved. And so they're moving more in. So this is going two ways. As far as opportunities, you got to remember when China's having a hard time, you have a better chance at opportunities. The Hong Kong people and the Taiwanese understand that. American companies should actually, this is a time when China is trying to act more open and be more welcoming. So it makes some sense to take advantage of that and maybe invest more in China. Don't run away. And it's not unpatriotic to do so. I mean, we needed a pushback. This was a long time coming, but it has to be a smart pushback. And I mean, the best thing we could have done is stayed in TPP. TPP is the stupidest thing the U.S. has done since invading Iraq. All these countries spent 5-6 years arguing within their own systems on the various concessions they had to make. It canceled 18,000 tariffs against us. We had an average of 1% tariff against those countries, our stuff coming in. This opened those areas to us more. It also created a trading block of 40% of GDP that China wasn't in. So you can incentivize China to compete. The reformers in Beijing were all for TPP because it would have forced a change in their system to compete, and it was a more positive thing. Instead, now we're trying to hit them over the head. Well, you're not going to get anywhere hitting China over the head. One of the things in Washington that is really disconcerting is they have no idea of the power of China. They have no idea of the sophistication of the companies there, the sophistication of the people, the power of that market, and how far it's advanced. They think if we take on China, that they will bend at the knee under the majesty and power of the United States. Sorry, that's a long time ago. And so, when Steve Bannon is starting these Cold War committees and all this, these guys have no clue about what China's become. We need to wake up. We need to wake up, we need to grow up, and we need to compete. We got to quit wallowing in yesterday.
And let's hope that maybe there's a new administration after the 2020 presidential election, and we're going to see U.S. rejoining CPTPP.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if the U.S. doesn't rejoin TPP, you'll watch 5 years from now, China may. Because by that time, China is such a dominant economic power here, it could rejoin TPP, and in doing so, water down a lot of the things it doesn't like. If we sit on the sidelines, China's on the move. China's a very smart tactical player. If we sit on our own arrogance and sit on the sidelines, we're going to wake up one day and be isolated from this region.
Let's hope for the best. Thank you very much, Jim.
Sure, glad to do it.